Mini episode 312 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.info.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Okay, everybody. Rick Morris and Kyle Ross coming at you here again in the FDH Lounge. A little bit of a bonus segment here. Throughout the football season, we're talking NFL. We're doing a preview show every week getting you ready for the slate of games. A little bit extra analysis for you this week here. Case study of a bad team is what we're calling this year. And it just happens to be the one that's in our home market, our Cleveland Browns, to come back. My Cleveland Browns.
I'm
a lifelong Browns fan. And again, since 1999, since they came back into the league, indisputably the worst team in the NFL, it's just a cycle of bad things here, and we're going to be getting into all of that here tonight. What's prompting this is the Trent Richardson trade as a basis for looking at all this. But Kyle and I are going to try and break this down and make sense of the indefensible with this organization.
From a multitude of angles. By the way, to your point, you said, you know, the worst organization since they've come back in 1999. That's non-debatable. I mean, everyone will agree that over the last, 14 years that would be?
14.
They're the worst team in the league, at least as far as mismanagement goes. Is this current run, 99 to the present, worse than the Bengals of the bulk of the 90s into the last decade, kind of basically between Sam Wojcik and Marvin Lewis?
I think it is. I think it absolutely is.
Because, I mean, that team never made the playoffs the entire time either.
No, they didn't. And it was it's funny because there are very few games that you remember as being sort of a hinge point in history. I will tell you, 91 season when the Bengals first went down, I was doing a
this was the infamous Bo Jackson game where he got hurt, right?
No,
was that a year after?
1990 was that? Yeah, it was the playoffs of the Raiders. I think it was the year after that.
Okay,
so it was the 91 season, and it was again. Coincidentally, the first year that the the second year the Browns were really down. It was the first year of Belichick. But at that time, I was doing some intern work for a fine right-wing organization in the D.C. area.
Good
so I was I was in D.C. for a couple of months on this internship watching Browns games at the Browns Backers Club, which at the time was in Falls Church, Virginia. Watching that Browns-Bengals game, it was a September game, and that was like the beginning of the end of the Bengals. Because that was like, they got off to a bad start, they couldn't beat a bad Browns team, and snowballed. That game right there started what you're talking about. And it's just rare that a single game can serve as that. This is worse because it goes longer.
It never got started. And some could say they were doomed from the beginning, the Browns.
Yeah.
I mean, we were talking off air when you look at this team. I mean, let's go back. You mentioned something I didn't even know about Art Modell potentially working with the league. / conspiring.
I'm pretty sure he voted for Jacksonville.
Okay, that's interesting.
Over Baltimore.
Because so, as if you're a younger fan, maybe you don't know this. Anyone who's our age certainly does. You know that you had Carolina and Jacksonville coming to the league together. When was that? 93, 94?
93 was the vote, I think. 95 was the season they came in.
Okay. For those who don't know, and I kind of really didn't know about this as much or had forgotten until I watched that 30 for 30 about the history of NFL football in Baltimore. It was more about the Colts leaving.
Yes.
Than the Ravens, obviously. I think it was called the Band Marches On or something like that.
It fetishized that marching band they had.
Yeah, it was decent enough. But as a doc. But Baltimore really thought they were going to get an expansion team that year. Carolina was kind of considered the one shoo-in, getting the Charlotte market.
Right.
But Baltimore really viewed itself as a front runner, is kind of the second choice, I should say. And obviously, as we know, Jacksonville got it. And it's been a pretty terrible market for most of it. I mean, you know,
yeah.
I think when people are always like, oh, what team should move to, you know, whenever people want to talk about a team potentially moving to L.A.,
right.
They're always like, what does Jacksonville just do?
It's so obvious.
You know, I mean, because it's only got two generations of fans, the second generation's. You know, they were actually, people forget they were actually good for some of those years. I mean, they were the best team in the league in 99. They lost, remember? They lost to Tennessee, were their only three losses that year.
Right.
The year that Tennessee went to the Super Bowl and lost to St. Louis.
And I remember from when they hosted what will be their first and only Super Bowl. I didn't know this about the area. Yeah, I didn't know this.
The media loathed it.
Jacksonville, like, first of all, it's not a big metro area.
But
the people that are there, it's spread out over an ungodly space of territory. So it's not a lot of people, and they're spread out. You have to drive a long way from one end of Greater Jacksonville to the other end of it.
Yeah, you know, basically the people there are Florida Gator fans.
It's
you
the all-time snow job how they ever got a franchise.
But anyway, so why do I bring that up? Not just to show off an amazing recollection of history.
I'm impressed.
But because Baltimore not getting an expansion team that year, then left the door open for Modell to have a willing dance partner and move the original Browns to Baltimore.
Yep.
That same Jacksonville team would then, I wouldn't say screwing, but we'll just use that term for lack of a better one here, a second time before the Browns even came back, when they and Carolina in their second year, remember this,
mm-hmm.
both made the conference championship games.
Yep.
The league dubbed the fact that they kind of, it was funny that the league was almost seemed angry
they were.
At them. Remember? They're
well,
like,
the owners were.
Yeah.
The owners laid pressure on the central office, the commissioner.
They're like, what? These teams are brand new and they're already doing better than us?
Right.
And they went back to the fact that in their initial draft, they were given the first two picks in every round and the last two picks in every round.
Right.
So the league then decided, well, from here on out, we'll never do that for another expansion team. The Browns, as you
Wasn't
know, were the next
the
expansion team.
Wasn't it just the first couple of rounds? Like the first, second, and third or whatever?
It might have been, but still, that's a lot.
That is a lot.
Yeah, okay,
that is a lot.
I mean,
yeah.
It was, I mean, can you imagine if that happened today?
Yeah.
I mean, great, I'm not saying that, but it definitely hurt the Browns.
Right.
Those teams doing so well right away hurt the Browns and basically ensured that the Browns would be a more traditional expansion team, kind of in the vein of a Tampa Bay, you know, it took them forever to get off the mat.
When John McKay, their head coach at one point in time, was asked about the execution
of
his
team.
Yeah,
and he said,
team.
I'm in favor of it. Yes. One of the all-time great quotes. But, so, and then you talk about the cursing again before the Browns even come back. What's Baltimore's first ever draft? First round, Jonathan Ogden, Ray Lewis.
Yeah.
That's like 8,000 Pro Bowls between those two. Ray Lewis, look, we're not going to get into this. I'm just going to say it because it's my belief. Possibly the greatest middle linebacker of all time.
Mike Singletary says hi.
All right. So the Browns get the team back in 99 and immediately are your traditional terrible expense. That first game, I was in college at the time. And I let's back up here. I want to say one thing before we go through this whole podcast. I'm from Cleveland, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
And as you also know, I am not a Cleveland Browns fan.
Okay.
I grew up actually liking the Oakland Raiders. I've never been and we could go on for hours about this subject, but we're just going to take these things at face value and not debate them.
Okay.
I've never been a guy who feels the need that you have to like the home team. You can like the home team. I understand why people like the home team. It's just easier. But I just think it's particularly as we've evolved, internet, ESPN, it's not like the 1950s in Brooklyn where you can only follow the Dodgers in the daily sports page.
Okay.
Okay. So I've never been a guy who thinks you have to be beholden to the home team. It's just me. It's just me.
Okay.
I don't think you need any reason to like a team. You can like whoever you want.
Versus I'm traditional, I root for the home team.
That's okay.
Okay.
And that's okay. It's America.
Yeah.
Okay. I remember the start of this with football is I remember watching the famous Oakland Seattle. It was the L.A. Raiders at the time. Seattle Monday night game with Bo Jackson.
Okay.
And it was the first time I was allowed to stay up late to watch a Monday night game. And Bo Jackson had that ridiculous game. And I went to my dad. I'm like, this guy's great. The Browns should get this guy. And my dad's like, well, it doesn't really work that way. I'm like, well, that's stupid. I like the L.A. Raiders now because I like this guy. And so I've never been a Cleveland sports fan of the individual teams, but I've always been close to the situation. I just want to get that out of the way.
Okay.
When people yesterday on Facebook, people were like, you're not a Cleveland sports fan. You don't understand. More on that later because you're right. I don't understand, but not for the reasons you think. So the Browns, just we'll go through the ugly history real quick.
Okay.
They got killed in that first game by Pittsburgh. It was like so, wasn't like 41-0. It was like so bad.
Yeah, it was pretty horrible.
And every decision that has been made has just been awful. I mean, every hire that's been made has been awful in retrospect. Again, we always talk about the benefit of hindsight.
Which, by the way, you mentioned that game. Browns fans, and I have good friends, an FDH Lounge dignitary, Paul Pasek, a friend of mine dating back to high school. I've seen him do this on Facebook. On the rare occasions the Browns beat the Steelers, he'll bring up the 51-0 game from 1989. Browns fans will think nothing of dropping that on Steeler fans as though it's scoreboard.
which is sad. And yeah, we're going to get to that later on.
Okay,
we're going to get to that later on.
I didn't mean to interrupt your rant,
because
I knew you'd get a kick
out
of that.
There's no other rivalry, really, where people are bringing up games from 1989.
I knew you'd get a kick out
of that. I'm sorry. And I know that as we're about to just go quickly through, the Browns haven't given a lot of other recent memories, which is a problem.
Yes.
But, okay, Chris Palmer was their first coach. Jacksonville, in their first year without him, all they did was have the best record in the league, I believe,
yeah,
if I've got my years correct. Chris Palmer may now be in the witness protection program.
I think he's the offensive coordinator in Tennessee this year. He's making a bit of a comeback.
Is he?
Yes,
oh,
I believe
well,
so.
That's fine. They scored one. Well, I guess they did win a game.
Yeah.
But anyway, then it was Butch Davis. You know,
the worst.
Yeah, Paul Davis. And yeah, here's a guy who, you know, people are like, oh, it didn't work out. He's already been fired from a college job. Granted, it was because of an academic scandal. But still, he had some talented teams in Chapel Hill and couldn't win more than 8-9 games.
I loathed him and Shoebox Pete Garcia because he's a fraud. I loathe frauds, as you know.
Well,
that's why I go on Rob Ryan rants. Like, he looks like he's from Central Casting, and he plays into that perfectly. He, by God, looks like a football coach. But he couldn't be a bigger fraud if he tried.
And he was terrible drafting.
Yes.
All of his drafts were terrible.
Yeah, personnel moves horrible.
By the way, I should point out, let's go back. Browns, their first ever pick was Tim Couch. That's a guy who, with that pick, when you're making a pick in 1999, draft your franchise QB, that's a guy who should, like, right now be retiring.
Yeah.
Tim Couch, this just in, has been out of the league for some time. Now, granted,
Houston. Injuries were horrible.
Now, granted, Houston had the same thing befall them with David Carr.
Right.
But they recovered and at least got Matt Shaw.
Well,
the Browns have never even gotten a Matt Shaw.
It set the tone for the draft picks to come. I will say, I was always a Tim Couch defender, thought that he took a lot of unfair crap from people. People felt – this is one of the things with Cleveland fans. They fell in love with Kelly Holcomb. People love mediocrities in this town that they think are like underdogs.
Yes.
Tim Couch was 10 times the quarterback Kelly Holcomb was. He's a guy who got hurt, and he's a guy who in his first couple of years when Chris Palmer had the system, had him in the 7-step drop when Tim Couch was a timing and rhythm quarterback at Kentucky.
Had no playbook at Kentucky.
Yeah, it's funny because my brother thinks I'm joking about this, but it's true. When you go back to the whole thing about Cleveland fans, you can get a Cleveland fan to swear to God that you're lying when you hold up stats in front of them. There was a Sunday night game in 2003 against the Steelers.
Yes.
Where I think Couch went 16 of 17 in the first half.
Yes.
One of the greatest halves of football anybody's ever had. And you'll get Couch haters to tell you, that never happened. That never happened. That never happened. It did happen.
By the way, truth, you're just playing into my fact I'm not a Cleveland sports guy.
Yeah.
But I did like OTM. I was watching the Chicago Cubs beat the Atlanta Braves that night in the playoffs.
Oh, okay.
That was the year. That was the year that they would the Bartman thing happened.
Oh, yeah,
so it was
2003. Okay.
But anyway, there's been bad drafts. And an issue is, and let's just fast forward this to the future, that I believe, I actually made this point last week, that the issue with the Browns isn't the number of restarts. It's that they've actually waited too long to do them. Because, again, this is with the benefit of hindsight, when you look back at every coach that's been fired, every quarterback that we've gotten rid of, none of them have gone on to do anything. I mean, like I talked about Palmer and Davis. Romeo Crennel has already been fired from another NFL team. It's becoming apparent, looking just at the first two games of Kansas City this year, that Romeo Crennel may have done one of the worst coaching jobs of all time last year. Eric Mangini. Here's a guy who, okay, he left the Jets. Oh, by the way, when Romeo Crennel left the Patriots, didn't they go on that historic season?
True, yeah.
Okay. Eric Mangini leaves the Jets. They go to the AFC Championship game the next 2 years.
Yeah.
He has now spent his last several years debating Skip Bayless and now taking on the special consultant role with the 49ers.
A dictatorial, miserable little bully prick who came in, of all the people, if there's anybody that stirs my bile as much as Butch Davis does out of this modern era, it would be Eric Mangini. Typical of the whole thing, the arrogance of coming in, and again, and the Mangini lovers, the Fangenies, if you will, they hate when anybody brings this up. But it's a window into the man's black soul.
Jeez.
Of what he did. The whole thing about the what he did. They had a mural at Brown's headquarters, and he painted over it. And then later on, it was this face saving thing. Oh, we wanted to put it somewhere else. It was a thing of, and this happens. This is not the first time this has happened. This happens in other organizations where it becomes a thing of, what's important is here and now, not the history from before. What that means is, what's important is me. What's important is my regime. What's important is what I'm doing. It's an egomaniacal, sociopathic urge that he gave into.
I'm not going to go as far as you.
Who would?
I'll say you need good point. Yeah. I'll say you need to embrace history, but you can't live in it, which is what Browns fans do. More on that later on.
Yes.
Okay. So Mangini stunk. And by the way, you talk about organizational resets not happening quick enough. He had that, little mini win streak at the end of the year one year that saved his job?
Yeah.
In retrospect, they should have just fired him anyway because they did it the next year.
Holmgren should have blown him out.
And it screwed him up.
Yeah.
And Holmgren and Heckert probably wish they would have done it because they would at least had an additional year of their guy, maybe had some more progress. Now, Pat Shurmur was terrible.
Right.
Pat Shurmur, God bless him. I don't know him personally. He may be a lovely coordinator somewhere else. He works with the Eagles now. He will never be a head coach in this league again.
In all fairness,
and nor should he be.
No, he won't. He's done.
He was the classic coordinator in coaches' clothing.
In fairness, I thought he was going to be a pretty good coach coming in. I was wrong. I will own this. Okay. I own when I'm wrong.
Okay. And then there's the stupid. And you've seen the thing. I think it made the rounds of some of the more national websites today.
Yeah.
Is it on 6th or 9th in the one window? The mannequin that's got all the quarterback names on it.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Here's the other thing, too. People always, I've got a couple buddies who swear, Derek Anderson got a raw deal, or you said with Tim Couch and stuff
yeah.
like that. The proof's in the pudding, man. After the Browns moved on from these guys,
yeah.
none of them did anything. So every debate.
Couch was out of the league with an arm injury the next year.
True.
So,
okay,
so.
But still. Look at these debates that they've had.
Yeah.
Couch v. Holcomb.
Yeah.
Anderson v. Quinn.
Right.
Fry v. Anderson.
Yeah.
Whedon versus Campbell.
Yeah.
McCoy versus Whedon. Mm-hmm. I mean, these are all just terrible quarterbacks being argued. So no matter what side you're on in any of those debates, I would just say you're wrong because they're all bad choices.
Well, here's the thing, though. When you talk about regimes coming in, turnovers not having quickly enough. Here's the whole thing on how I look at this. And this goes back to everything with me, with FantasyDraftHelp.com, which predated the FDH Lounge. But when myself, Jason Jones, created the lounge, it was, let's take what we're doing with fantasy sports and break it down in the same way. What I want to see in anything, Kyle, any subject we're talking about, but especially sports, I guess, do it in a scientific manner, assess what's there with clear eyes. What I don't like, it's an infantile thing that I just keep seeing out of Berea, ironically my neighboring suburb from where I live, of just, I can't win with this. You come in and every regime thinks that they have license to do it. It's I wouldn't fault it if I thought it was okay, they are clearly assessing what's here, what's not here, because there's a lot that's here presently that they could look at and feel good about as a foundation to build on. Having said that, if you're perceived as winning with the last regime's guys, you don't have as much rope in the eyes of the public, and they want to avoid that above all else. Don't
yeah.
put anything above winning.
Yeah.
Don't put agendas above winning.
And it's interesting. You take a look at Kansas City, who looks
yeah.
like it's on its road to recovery.
Yeah.
They made two very clear changes that
yeah.
needed to be the coach and the quarterback. But they kept Pioli's gone, too.
Yeah.
But they cleared out those three, and they just made three simple changes. They're on the road to recovery.
See, if it was Cleveland, Jamal Charles would be gone.
You're right.
Dwayne Bowe would be gone. They don't fit into my system.
That's wrong.
Kyle, I have a problem with that.
That is wrong. But I'm saying in the case of Cleveland, they've never really even had a Jamal Charles or a Dwayne Bowe, in my opinion. I mean, it has been historic ineptitude.
Sure.
Since 1999. And so let's fast forward to the present, because that's what people want to hear about with
yeah.
the Trent Richardson deal. I'll talk about the I'm actually more interested and have more of a rant to go on the reaction from the fans, but I'll talk about the deal itself.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. When we woke up on Wednesday, September 18th,
mm-hmm.
right? That was Wednesday. September 18th.
Yeah.
In my power rankings, and I know in yours, the Cleveland Browns were the second worst team in the league.
Correct.
The first decision they made that day was to announce Brian Hoyer, third string quarterback, has only made one career start for Arizona, who had its revolving door of quarterbacks last year, the starter over Jason Campbell. There were Browns fans who were up in arms about this. I don't know why Browns fans get up in arms about things like that. It's like, dude, Brandon Whedon's terrible. It just doesn't matter. If you have any of those three guys,
right?
What's in baseball, they talk about wins above replacement.
Yeah.
What's Brandon Whedon's wins above replacement? What's Jason Campbell's wins above replacement? Are the Browns a significantly better team with Whedon instead of Campbell or Campbell instead of Hoyer?
Campbell is the epitome of a replacement player, but that's the thing. His
Was he in the movie The Replacements? He could have been.
He could have been. Well, it's funny because when we were doing our Browns analysis for this week's game previously, where I said Hoyer's ceiling at least is higher than Campbell's because Campbell, like, you know what
you
he
don't
is.
Don't know what
but,
it
but
is.
On a, but on a
it
given,
could be lower.
Right.
It could be lower.
But on a given week, Campbell's ceiling is higher because of, ironically, because of his floor. Like, Campbell, you know what you're going to get out of him, and you have a better chance to win in the short term with him. Hoyer, you have a better chance to win in the longer term because of what he could be,
or
but
even
probably
the short
isn't.
Term.
But
like,
probably
you know
isn't.
The example is with
what?
That, like, on a more national scale that everyone remembers,
mm-hmm.
is the Tim Tebow, Kyle Orton debate of a couple of years ago. I am as passionate today as I was back then that the Broncos absolutely 100% made the right choice going with Tim Tebow. Kyle Orton is a backup for life. Mm-hmm. He's okay. He's kind of like the Jason Campbell, where you knew his ceiling. With Tebow, you had used a first-round pick on him in the past.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't know he had certainly, and he's out of the league already right now, as we know.
Yeah.
He had a lower floor, like much like Hoyer does in this situation, but potentially a higher ceiling. You put him in. They did put him in. They kept winning games. Yes, it was ugly wins. Yes, it was not because of him. But still, you always go – here's the thing. Denver was going to be a bad – they were coming off a bad year that year. If you're going to be bad anyway, you might as well try to roll the dice rather than, like, with Jason Campbell. This Browns team, the bottom line, stinks anyway, okay? They're not – they were not – we both overestimated in our projections.
Sure.
I had them at 7 wins before the
year. I had them at 6.
I watched 2 games, and when they lost the Miami game – which was one I thought they'd win, I immediately downgraded him to 6.
Yeah.
I watched him last week. I said, wow, it's probably going to be 4 or 5. So, again, when we woke up yesterday, where are we at? You're looking at a 4 or 5 win team that ain't going to do nothing, that's going to pick in the top – by the way, that's great English by me – that's going to pick in the top 5, probably of the draft, and they go with a third-string quarterback. Big deal. What are you going to do? You're going to lose one extra game because Brian Hoyer is your quarterback? That actually helps you.
Let me say this, though, because, again, you know – the power rankings, and I'm glad I started doing this last year with FDH. I'm going to continue doing this through this year, and you can check out, of course, our weekly power rankings, the FDH Lounge Multimedia Magazine, the FDHLounge.blogspot.com, of doing the numbers for every week and doing them like an alliance so you can trace the progression. There are peaks and valleys here throughout the course of a season. You and I had the Browns at 31, but let's just say we had the Browns at 31 with their feet in jello. The Browns now are at 31 with their feet in cement. That is what the difference is in my estimation.
I had kind of given up on them after 2 weeks. I did not.
They were going to be the second worst team in the league come hell or high water, no matter
it
what.
Was not
worse than the Raiders, no matter what, Kyle.
It was not guaranteed, but it was likely.
Okay.
I mean, I'm serious.
I mean,
that's what I'm saying. I think Browns fans, and again, we're going to get to this because that's my big thing here, had an inflate, like, this whole, well, if we're going to be bad, we're going to do it the old-fashioned way, we're going to try, is the wrong approach to have. To me, this what has been torn down in the last 48 hours was not much. You didn't tear down a Morton Steakhouse. You tore down a Chick-fil-A.
See, but and this is the thing, though, and this gets to the methodology. I fear that it's the beginning of more changes. And what I look at is, what did they have anyways? Let's look at this with clear eyes. They had probably about, and I'll grant you, where there were holes, they were gaping, and quarterback was the worst hole, and it's the most important position on the field. But I would still say 15 starters out of 22 legitimately on this team. A good, young, cheap nucleus, a lot of cap room.
Yes.
You build on that. If you're swinging a wrecking ball into what I just described, then you have an agenda other than winning. And this gets back to the whole Philly thing here between Jeffrey Lurie and Joe Banner and Tom Hecker, and all of them hate each other. And, ooh, these are Hecker players. They have cooties. So let's trust Mike Lombardi. And let's trust Mike Lombardi's impeccable track record. That he's a guy who's never done a damn thing in the league other than want to draft a guy like touchdown Tommy Vardell. Let's act like he has a better track record than Tom Hecker because he kisses Joe Banner's ass. And apparently, Hecker whizzed in his Wheaties at some point back in Philadelphia. It looks
so
like
agendas.
So you
don't like the new regime.
Kyle, no, I don't. Kyle, it looks, although out of the bunch, I don't have much of a problem with Chud. I feel like Chud is kind of...
Well, what do you know about it?
Well, here's the funny thing. You talk about roller coasters in terms of perception. After the 2007 season, we were convinced the head coach in waiting in the Browns was Rob Chudzinski. It took a while. It took a lot back and forth, but it happened eventually. But I'm not saying I'm sold on him. I'm saying I liked the hire because he was promising. I thought he had a pretty good track record from what he did.
Well, and anyone's better than Pat Shurmur.
That's true.
And here's the
thing.
That's true. Look, if you're grading Browns players, coaches, front office, Rob Chudzinski's clearly an incomplete.
Right.
You don't know anything. He's coached
right.
two games. I mean, but Brandon Whedon, it's fair to give up on him at this point.
It is fair.
I mean,
yeah.
Look, again, it's not always fair to. You can't really compare him to Andrew Luck. He was taken much further down in the first round.
Right.
They probably reached on him. I will say this, and we'll get, and then this will segue into the Richardson move. But with Whedon, look at these other guys who have come in the league in the last 2 years. You look at them, you know, even a guy like Russell Wilson, who was drafted in, what, the third round?
Mm-hmm.
Kaepernick was second round guy.
Yeah.
You knew after like four games these guys were really good.
Right.
And you look at Brandon Whedon, he started, dude, he's like into, like the idea now, like it used to be, oh, you got to give these guys time. It's not like that anymore, man.
Right.
You can kind of tell after like 14 starts, which I think Whedon's had.
Right.
At this point, you're like, you look at him, it's like, I always told people who wanted to defend Whedon, show me a stretch of any game where you're like, this guy's good.
And that's the thing, too. After 14 games, here's the thing. If you have any hope whatsoever, the very worst that can be said about you is that you're inconsistent. If you have some good and some bad, if there's times when you really look like a winner, then you merit a little more time.
Like Cam
Brandon
Newton.
Whedon,
like,
yes,
Cam, like,
yes.
Cam, like Cam Newton
yes.
has looked awesome at times, and then he's looked
yes.
really bad at others.
Yes, that's what it is. It takes something like
Brandon
that.
Brandon Whedon has never had anything approaching like Cam Newton's
no,
first two
he
games.
He hasn't.
I mean, he's never
Listen,
had a good game.
And Whedon, okay, Whedon was a horrible draft pick. Again,
he was. And so, you know what? Here's the thing. When people want to defend Heckert and Holmgren, and I always say it's like, you know, you've got, like, that slightly racist buddy.
Yeah.
Okay, he's less racist than Adolf Hitler, but you still don't put him in charge of a diversity coalition.
Okay.
Okay? And I know that's an extreme example, and I apologize to anyone who may be offended by that, but I think people get the point. Heckert Holmgren, okay, maybe they were better than some previous regimes and possibly
right.
this current one, but I don't think they were that great,
and I'm not
man.
Saying they
that
didn't make
Richardson
mistakes.
That Richardson-Whedon
yeah.
draft was bad.
I
Brandon
I was...
Whedon was a reach, and do you know who they traded with? They traded up to get Richardson. Do you know who they traded with?
They
Minnesota.
Traded with Minnesota. Yeah.
Well, they were really going to take Trent Richardson. I know there
I
were
know.
Questions about Peterson, but come on.
Yeah.
That was a bad mismanaged thing.
Well,
here's the thing.
I wanted Justin Blackman with that pick anyways.
It's always about – we talked about ceilings earlier.
Yeah.
You know what you have with some people.
Yeah.
Some people have higher ceilings. In this league right now, you
yeah.
want people with the higher ceilings.
Yeah.
And the Browns have never gone for the higher ceiling approach. They were outbid for RG3. You
yeah.
could say now that RG3 is injury prone, and maybe that's a good thing. Whatever. RG3
right.
took the Washington Redskins to the playoffs last year. The Cleveland Browns were home watching with you and me.
Yeah.
Okay? A couple of years ago, they whiffed on Julio Jones. They traded down
I
to,
wanted
address,
Julio Jones.
To
yeah.
address an obvious need
I wanted
with
him.
Julio Jones.
Yeah.
They got Phil Taylor. Whatever. He's fine. But, again,
and
ceiling.
And Whedon for the next year.
Yeah.
And the pick to go get Richardson. That's what everyone will tell you. Listen, I'm not going to defend those picks, and I think the Heckert record was a mixed bag. I just think Heckert is infinitely superior to Mike Lombardi. It's a thing here. When you talk about the methodology of stuff, Kyle, and when regimes bury the guys that they inherited, here's what I
don't agree. I'm with you that burying for the sake of burying is stupid and
yes.
infantile.
And
you use a great word with infantile.
Thank you. And here's the thing, and again, I'm not saying that you – don't misinterpret what I'm about to say here. I'm not saying you make moves just to placate the fans. But here's
you should
what
never
I,
do that.
No, but here's what I compare it to. As far as contributing to a beaten-down fan base for which many dozens of individuals bear responsibility over the last 14 years collectively for
including
that.
Including the fans beating down themselves.
True. But,
foolishly.
But as far as the pattern that has just repeated itself over and over again, new regime comes in, buries everybody that's here, we need another five-year plan. Here's what I liken that to. And I told you off air I was going to go to this point of comparison. Vince Russo. The cycle starting in late 1999 in WCW.
Yes.
All right. He comes in.
Yes.
He runs it for a few months. Then he gets thrown out of there. The interim regime runs it for a couple months. Him and Bischoff come back. Whatever. What happened was every time there was a change in bookers, there would be a reset. And the fans were told, what you were watching last week doesn't matter. The only thing that matters is now. And after a certain point, the
this
ratings...
This can apply to any company.
The ratings were
way.
In the toilet. But, well, a company that any company that deals with the public.
Yes.
Any that needs to engage the public.
Yes.
It's a thing of, like, you can't... Banner and Lombardi, whatever. They'll be like, well, don't blame us for what happened before. Okay, but you are, like, the half-dozenth regime to be here in the last 14 years that has said nothing you saw before matters. You know, there was a nice stretch of football around the middle of last season. None of that matters.
I'll say this.
What?
None of it really has mattered.
But I described before what they inherited. You cannot describe the state of this team with the salary cap,
right,
with the young, cheap nucleus,
look,
a handful of stars.
Look, I'm not saying that they need to be spiteful and just get rid of everybody.
But I'm saying
you
can't oversimplify. You can't. This is nothing but garbage here. Kyle, it's not nothing but a pile of hot garbage out in Berea.
There's got to be something salvageable. I mean, you can't tell me that nothing is good on the team. To that point, I agree.
You probably have two-thirds of your necessary starters you already have.
The Trent Richardson deal clearly in the short term, meaning this year, makes the Browns a worse team. The Browns, it was tough for them to be like I said, when I woke up on Wednesday, I had them as the second worst team in the league ahead of only Jacksonville. It's kind of close now for who the worst is. I think the Browns are only going to win one game this year.
Their front seven, though, may allow them to steal some games. They have a good front seven.
Do you know what they need to do, though?
What?
And again, I'm not advocating. People are going to roll their eyes and conclude that's not the Cleveland way. More on that later.
Uh-huh.
They need to tank the Jacksonville game on purpose.
Oh, I'll be rooting harder for us to lose that game than
by
I ever.
By the way, will Jacksonville have the same approach, and will that game?
Yes.
What's gonna, like? Could we have Brian Hoyer and Chad Heady intentionally throwing pick sixes to the other team, and the defenders dropping them wide open? Roger Goodell may have to step in on that.
Yeah,
one.
The competitive integrity of the league is at stake.
Yes.
You know what? As long as we're talking about this, let me just get this in here and ask you: will you back me up on this?
I don't know. You haven't told me.
As far as the reaction to Browns fans to this,
another
thing I don't like. All right, you probably, even though you come at some things from a different perspective as me, I'm sure you don't like the whole smart mark mentality more than I do, of people throwing stuff out there. This means something. You know what? The next person.
Oh, it means they're tanking.
I hope,
is what it means.
No. As far as, like, this person thinking they're insightful, I hope the next person that does this bites down on a cyanide tablet. I am so damn sick and tired of hearing 3.5 yards per carry with no context. We could lose a lot of games with just 3.5 yards per carry. I am sick of these a-holes that are out there with their Trent Richardson 3.5 yards per carry. No talk of the fact that it's been the worst offensive line in the league the first two games of this season, that he had 11 touchdowns last year and almost 1,000 yards playing with a flak jacket with injured ribs, of reducing what he has done to, like, zero context. I agree he wasn't worth the third pick in the draft. I agree he's probably not going to be a Pro Bowl running back. But don't act like he's the 28th best running back. Shut up! I am sick of people doing that, Kyle.
That was very impassioned.
It was.
I'm going to tell you what.
What?
I don't think he here's the thing. The problem is that he has a lot more value to Indianapolis than he does to Cleveland.
Sure, because they don't suck.
Yes. The thing is.
And they're a power rushing team.
Yeah. The thing is, I kind of do agree with the people that say, well, we were going to lose with them anyway.
But, like, I heard some moron caller on the radio.
Well,
some
that's
woman
your first mistake.
It was. Some woman called up one of the stations like, Ogbonnaya's got a better yards per carry average.
Okay, that's terrible. That's
Kyle,
terrible.
That's what I'm talking about.
Okay, that's inexcusable.
They're demagoguing the 3.5 thing.
No, you're right. Look, you can't just look at a statistic. You can't live in that. Like, you know me. Like, it's like when people are like, oh, the Indianapolis Colts are 11-5. They're better than every 10-6 team last year. No, they had a terrible point differential. They were just lucky in close games.
Right.
You know, you have
historically
to,
lucky.
You can cite stats, but you have to put them in
context.
You're right. Not just because you average 3.6 yards per carry doesn't mean you're better than a running back who averaged 3.5 yards per carry. That's silliness.
Right.
So, to your point, I agree somewhat.
Okay. Thank you.
But you also have to agree the Cleveland Browns were going nowhere fast. And that's
true.
My whole issue is that you didn't tear down a lot. And I'm not defending the deal.
Not
because
yet, though. I'm scared of what's coming.
That could be ugly. And if they start just getting rid of people for the sake of doing it, that's wrong.
That's what I'm talking
about.
But
here's the thing with the Browns. I said this to somebody last week, as a matter of fact, and I was like, you know what's going to happen to the Browns this year because this is what just given their history that we kind of went through real quick, they're going to get the number two pick in the draft behind Jacksonville, and Jacksonville's going to take Teddy Bridgewater.
Yeah.
And it's going to – and, you know, Bridgewater's much better than the other quarterbacks. I think you're not going to want to take, like, a Brett Hundley out of USC.
No Taj Boyd for you?
I don't – number two? We'll see the rest of the year how he plays. He's still got, a you know, almost a full senior season.
Okay.
And, I mean, he looked great against Georgia. But, you know, Bridgewater's clearly the guy. And I think the Browns have actually really been hurt by some of this let's do it the Cleveland way and fight till the end mentality. And, you know, what happened with the Whedon pick? They wanted the kid Kendall Wright, and he got picked right before they took Whedon.
That's my problem with it. You never take a quarterback as a consolation pick. And that's why I want to lay that at Holmgren's feet. Maybe it was Heckert, but whatever. I agree with you on that. The methodology for Whedon told you all you need to know that it was a failure. They took a quarterback as a fallback. You never do that.
So
in the first round. You do it in the fourth
so
round.
So I'm with you that if they're just being infantile, keep using that because it was such a great word choice.
But thank you. Thank you.
If but they're just being infantile and getting rid of Heckert guys because they're Heckert guys.
That's what I'm afraid
that's
of.
That's stupid. Now, you should just get rid of them because they stink. And there were some guys from the Heckert regime that stunk. Okay,
right.
But there were some that were good, and
but like if they're putting Billy Winn on the curb next week because he's a Heckert guy,
yeah, that's,
I'm afraid it's going to go to that level,
and that would be wrong. I'm not defending this new regime. All right, like I said, in the short term, this team somehow found a way to get worse for a deal that does not necessarily guarantee them to get better long term. But the way the roster was construed, they were not going to contend for I didn't think for they needed a this is even before yesterday they needed a total game changer to come in on offense. If they think Teddy Bridgewater is that guy and they want to blatantly tank the season, I do not have a problem with that at all. If they are you going to tell me the Indianapolis Colts, when they realized Peyton Manning's situation, did not tank for Andrew Luck?
Oh, they did. They were fortunate. They had everything go their way.
Teddy Bridgewater's not Andrew Luck.
Right.
Or Andrew Luck, I watched him his junior year play against USC. I texted my buddy. I'm like, this guy's better than half the quarterbacks in the NFL. All right, so that's once
like,
in a generation.
Like Peyton Manning, he's a legacy guy.
That,
it's
that's
not a surprise.
One, yeah, that's yeah. once in a generation
legacy
guy,
guys are like
Andrew
that.
Luck. But
he inherited the genes for football that Pat Shurmur never did.
The thing is, there's a lot of things. The people in Cleveland are be hurt by this. There's five, for lack of a better term, Rust Belt cities.
Mm-hmm.
The politically incorrect term would be the cities black people don't want to play in.
Okay.
Okay, rich, particularly rich black people. Those are Buffalo, Pittsburgh, Cleveland, Detroit, and Green Bay. Two of those teams in the last 20 years have been good. The other three have not.
Okay.
Those two teams that have been good are Pittsburgh and Green Bay.
Okay.
Why have they been good? Because they draft well.
Right.
The Browns have not drafted well.
Right.
You, if you're the Browns, you have to build through the draft. You have set yourself up. Again, this is making the leap of faith that the new regime, which does not have a proven track record, will select the correct players.
Au contraire, it's their track record that troubles me.
True.
I had a friend today defend to me on Twitter about the greatness of Barkevious Mingo, and I was like, oh, well, good to see you're already writing his Hall of Fame speech.
Yes.
I hope you get to deliver it for him.
See, you, I think, more so than me, think that there was the defense. I will say this. The new regime built a good defense. It did not build a good offense at all. That offense was worthless.
You know what? Again, they got good parts to add for the front seven, but the defensive line last year was pretty damn good. And they had a couple pretty
I'm
good
saying,
and they
I'm
had a pretty,
the
couple pretty
good
linebackers.
I'm saying the defense was good.
That they inherited from Tom Hecker.
Yes.
And they to their credit, they added good players to them as well. But that's what I'm saying.
They have the defense is fine except for the second quarter. This Buster screen. Somebody's got to give him the old yeller treatment.
Yeah.
But so they need to address that position. But other than that, they're fine, I think, largely.
Buster Screen needs to get sent to Belize.
Yes, yes. But the offense is terrible. And, look, I'm not saying that. I mean, if you think – here's the thing. If Trent Richardson – I heard it defined as this today when I was listening. I was listening to the national discussion, not the local. I don't listen to local sports talk radio.
That's where you were smarter than I was.
The national discussion was for Indianapolis, if Trent Richardson is Edgerrin James or who was the other good running back they had?
Well, Falk.
Okay, if he's like Edgerrin Marshall, that's kind of a big I don't think you can expect someone to be Marshall Falk, but if he's Edgerrin James, then that's a good trade for the Colts. But if he's not, they have a first rounder, and that's not like people were saying.
I think maybe James kind of light. That's not bad for them. But if he's not
Edgerrin, you know, because Marshall Faulk's a Hall of Famer, Edgerrin James isn't.
Yeah.
If he's not Edgerrin James, then that probably wasn't a good trade for Indianapolis. They gave up a first-round pick is a lot.
But they have that Stanford power running system.
Yes.
And he fits into it perfectly.
Look, it's going to be tough if Richardson's good for Indianapolis, especially right away. But he just wasn't going to do anything this year for the Browns. You can't dispute that.
Not behind that offensive line.
He was going to run.
O'Neal Cousins at all.
They were going to – every defense was going to put eight in the box.
Yep.
And Trent Richardson's not Adrian Peterson of last year.
No.
Okay? Look, Adrian Peterson of this year, the Vikings are going to be bad with that. The Vikings are a slightly better version of the Browns.
Right.
Were, I guess, you know what it was. And they're not going to be very good. So, I mean, it stands to believe the Browns were just not going to do anything. Now, I don't know. It's funny the comments came out with Lombardi praising the Richardson pick when it was made.
Yeah.
When he worked for the NFL Network.
Well, he's a two-faced, gutless little chode.
Well,
what do you expect?
Okay. Well,
Mr. Bootlegs for Bernie.
Bernie Kosar had diminishing skills. That was the correct move, by the way, to get rid of him.
Sure. Let's start calling bootlegs for when the team's 2-0. Once again, agendas. Why was anything important other than the fact that the team was 2-0?
The Eagles were 3-1 last year. You call them the worst 3-1 team of all time. They should have just stayed pat, you're saying? Because they did, and it didn't work.
You should make a quarterback change when you're 2-0, like basically for no reason. And when you have Vinny Interceptiverde on the bench.
How did Bernie Kosar do the rest of his career?
He won a Super Bowl the same year. Got meaningful minutes in the NFC Championship game. Let's not forget this. You're looking at me in disbelief. As by the way, just to troll you, I'm wearing my Kosar Cowboys jersey.
It's like these Browns debates that happen now. Did nothing the rest of his career. I don't want to hear
what Vinny Testaverde ever do in his career.
He hung around.
By the way, they cut Bernie for Todd Philcox. Well, not for Vinny, because Vinny was hurt at the time. They cut him for Todd Philcox.
A questionable decision, but still.
But that's what I'm saying. Mike Lombardi is a gutless little chode who sucked up the Bill Bozo choke back in the day.
Bill Belichick, the winner of 3 Super Bowls, mind you.
Let's not engage in the revisionism and think that
winning a Super Bowl is revisionism?
No, it's revisionism to say he was the same guy in Cleveland.
No, he wasn't.
He himself wouldn't tell you that he is.
No, because he learned what not to do.
From everything that he did, and from everything Mike Lombardi did, like their Vardell draft, and everything else that followed. Powell in the first round.
I'm sorry that Cleveland had to be the guinea pig. Yeah. Let me shed a tear for that.
Bill Belichick, who threw a phone at the wall in the draft room because he couldn't draft the immortal Kyle Brady because he got snaked on him. This is the infamous brain trust of the Bill Belichick Browns of the early 90s that everyone wants
to
glorify.
People aren't allowed to make mistakes?
Everybody made their mistakes here. I'll grant you that the assistants and the scouts and everything like that went on to great things other places. None of them did squat when they were here. Mike Lombardi has never done a damn thing in the NFL. He is a skid mark on the underwear of the NFL, and Joe Banner thinks he couldn't have found a better GM just because he's got a puppet to play the part of GM.
Well, let's see what they do. The bottom line is this.
What?
And I'm glad you're getting upset because that's going to –
I was warned by all my Philly media contacts about Joe Banner. I was warned, and they were right. They were all right.
So you're saying give up on this new regime already?
I already have.
Okay.
I mean, look, I'll be rooting them for him to go 0-16 to get Bridgewater because what alternative do I have? But still.
Right. Let's transition here because your emotional reaction.
It's not about me. We're talking about the fans here. Yeah.
Now we are because your emotional reaction leads me to my point.
Okay.
Is that I don't – you know, somebody yesterday goes, you're not a Browns fan. You don't understand. And you know what? You're right. I don't.
Okay.
I don't understand why people care about the Cleveland Browns.
Okay.
Cleveland sports fans, their passion, this passion they wear with the badge of honor, in my opinion, they're mistaking passion for stupidity.
Given the fact that the phrase came from another color, isn't it ironic that it's a Browns thing you wouldn't understand?
Yes. But yes, that is good.
Yes.
The Cleveland Browns, it's so funny. I have a major problem with Cleveland sports fans.
I do too a lot of the time.
I think they're really dumb. I'll be honest with you.
Reactionary,
they are the
venting.
Too emotional. Yeah.
We agree.
Okay. The Cleveland Browns have basically just told you, don't care about us this year. We stink. we're throwing up the flag. You know, they can come out in the press conference, but and Joe Banner can be like, I think this really sets us up. And, you know, I mean, what's he going to say? You can't come out and say, yep, we're tanking. You can't do that.
He's a smarmy douche. What do you expect from him?
How do you feel about Joe Banner? But what do the Browns fans do? They care more then.
Right.
Cleveland sports fans just don't care about the Cleveland Browns. But Browns fans, this is the only city in America. I read an article today about the Seattle Seahawks. It was written by a guy named Robert Mays.
Okay.
It was on Grantland. And it was why the Seattle Seahawks
he's a very good writer,
have
yeah.
become the coolest team in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
And I read it, and I enjoyed it. And I agreed with it mostly. And then I read it again from the what I feel would be the perspective of a Cleveland sports fan. And I got angry. Because, not at the article, at Cleveland sports fans.
Okay.
Because.
Who weren't mentioned in this article. This should be good.
So, in the article, and have you not read it?
I have. It's pretty good.
Oh, you did read it.
I did read it.
I loved how, like, the opening line was, like, it's 2 hours before kickoff, and Seattle smells like weed and draft beer or something like that. Hey, I'll tell you what. I like the Seahawks. But there was this note that he made this note. He's like, wow. He's like, you know, all the jerseys are new,
mm-hmm.
and you get the feeling that, like, everyone kind of just recently got into this team. Cleveland sports fans.
So you're celebrating front-runnerism?
Cleveland sports fan would be disgusted by that. Oh, well, you Johnny, you'll buy new jerseys. Oh, you know.
I remember the bygone days of Brian Sipe taking the job from Dr. David Mays.
And look, it's cool to know your history and mm-hmm. be passionate. There's a line, man. And Cleveland sports fans have crossed it. They think there's this badge of honor with, like, the scars. Like, look, this is where I hit my head during the drive, and my father had a heart attack during the fumble. And, you know, I remember, you know, I took my seat from the old Browns stadium.
See,
and I'm going to tell you something right now. That don't mean a hill of beans. This is the only sport. And granted, this is where I've lived, so I can't confirm this. But it appears to be the only market in America with multiple sports, professional sports teams that doesn't get the concept of front running and being a smart consumer.